Hi, everyone, and welcome to Focus Forward, an executive function podcast where we explore the challenges and celebrate the wins you'll experience as you change your life through working on improving your executive function skills. I'm your host, Hannah Choi. Before I talk about today's topic, I want to share a little about a podcast episode I am working on. I'd like to highlight stories of people tackling their executive functioning challenges. If you have a story you'd like to share on Focus Forward about the work you've done to address EF challenges in your life, whether you're a Beyond Book Smart coaching client, a parent in the middle of it all, a person with ADHD or another diagnosis, or a stressed out and super busy college student, or just anybody else with a story, I would love to hear from you. You can email me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. Thanks. Okay, so in today's episode, we are diving into a topic that is so important for families navigating those ups and downs of childhood and parenting: behavioral and executive function challenges in our kids. I had the pleasure of inviting back to Focus Forward the wonderful Dr. Narissa Bauer, a developmental pediatrician with a wealth of knowledge and compassion for helping families thrive. Narissa has been a great partner with us at Beyond Booksmart, and I'm so happy to be able to share her wisdom with you all again. So listen today to hear us explore the messages behind children's behaviors, the connection between emotional regulation and executive function, and how parents and caregivers can approach challenges with curiosity, collaboration, and love. Dr. Bauer shared invaluable insights from understanding the why behind behaviors to the power of the pause and how we can model self-regulation for ourselves and for our kids. Be sure to check the show notes after you listen to learn more about Narissa's work and for a link to the other episode in which Narissa is featured. Whether you are a parent, a teacher, or a caregiver, this episode is packed with strategies and encouragement to help you support the kids in your life and yourself more effectively. Let's get on with the show. Hey, Narissa. Thanks so much for coming back to Focus Forward.
I'm so excited to be here. And this is such a great topic and, of course, a big concern of parents because I think, you know, obviously every parent wants their child to thrive, and behavior challenges are very common among kids with ADHD, whether that be a byproduct of the emotional regulation or the impulsivity or the coexisting things that happen with ADHD, like anxiety and depression and autism. So it can be, a journey. And I know that parents want the best for their kids. So I'm really glad to talk to you about this today.
Yeah. And I'm really glad that you mentioned autism, because I really would like to, I would like to include all populations in here, including people who maybe don't have any kind of diagnosis. And maybe it's just typical behavior. And that actually leads to the first thing that I wanted to ask you, like, how can we discern between this typical behavior and then maybe something that needs some additional attention, maybe needs some questions being asked about it?
I like to think with parents about, first of all, you know your child the best, right? You have seen them through all the times and as they develop. So you have a really good sense of what's normal and not normal, right? And one of the things that I will always try to let parents know is that there is not a question that's too big or too small to talk to me about, right? And I do want to start this conversation with, you know your child the best. If there's anything amiss that you're worried about, trust that instinct. Because behavior challenges in general are a reflection of the fact that our kids would if they could, but some kids have predisposing risk factors that make it such that they may not be able to adequately tell us what they need or want, right? And that tends to lend itself to acting impulsively or having a meltdown or, you know, shutting down, those kinds of things, right? Getting aggressive. So I invite the listeners to think about, when they think of behavior challenges, it really is a marker for something else going on underneath that we just need to have a little curiosity about to understand what is really driving this behavior. It's probably some sort of emotion down there, But kids oftentimes do not have the emotional literacy to be able to adequately tell us what they're feeling. They're just feeling. And that's really the crux of all of this, is that we need to help support all kids, not just kids with ADHD or autism or anxiety, known diagnoses, because the brain is still developing and maturing until age 25. So executive function, of which controlling our impulses and emotions is part of that. And so I expect all kids up until they're 25 at least to have, some challenges here and there. So it's not, uncommon to see these, but to your question is, when should we be concerned, right? And probably the biggest thing is, if your radar is going off, like, oh my gosh, this is not how my kid is, right? Everybody's entitled to have a good or a bad day. But
Yes.
if it's happening, all the time, right, or over a period of time, that's a problem. So, and then if it's starting to affect them in home and school, in their relationships, in their self-esteem, or if we're starting to hear a lot of negative talk, right, then that is cause of concern. So I think we need to be thinking about a behavior challenge, first of all, as, okay, let's get curious about this. What's happening here? And what is my child unable to tell me? Because again, kids would if they could.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I always think about that. Like, kids aren't, they're not deciding to be challenging. They're not like, you know what? I'm gonna give my parents a hard time today. I'm just gonna do it for fun.
Right. I mean, nobody wants to get in trouble. And that's the thing, but it can be really hard sometimes to keep that in mind. And this is not to point fingers at anybody, because we're all human, right? I mean, we're going through life and there's all these demands and expectations on us. But truly, I think if kids would, they could. And so but it's hard for parents or adults to recognize that and remember that day to day, especially if the behaviors are big and explosive and, kind of whoa, that elicits that strong reaction. Because in the moment, then we're also getting dysregulated too.
I wonder if we could somehow convince the world to call them behavior messages, not behavior challenges.
Yes. Like it's our job to kind of try to help figure out what's going on.
Detect, decode it.
Yes, decoding.
When you're really in it as a parent, it can be hard to see behavior objectively. And also, if you have maybe your own neurodivergence that you're dealing with, or just you're just really stressed out, or you're just a parent that has a lot of things to do, it can make it really hard to discern, what is this, and what do I do about it, or how am I supposed to feel about this?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's the most important thing, is because, like I said, getting back to the fact that kids' brains are still maturing until age 25, that is one piece of the puzzle. Obviously, it's not an excuse, it's an explanation. But when you layer on top mental health conditions like ADHD or anxiety or depression or autism, there are going to be delays in executive functioning. So, first of all, a child who's 12 or 13 may not be functioning at that level. They're probably functioning more like a 9 or 10-year-old. And again, that's just because the skill development is not there yet. We have to meet kids where they are. Secondly, kids don't live in a vacuum. They live with other people. And as ADHD, these types of conditions run in families. And so, again, if a parent themselves has ADHD and are undertreated or untreated or undiagnosed, that can also play into a lot of the family dynamics that's happening in the moment. I mean, we all have gone through COVID, right? And we've seen a larger number of mental health conditions as a result of this, and we're still dealing with the after effects of this. So, I think if anything, we need to sort of show each other self-compassion, but it's hard. I'm gonna, you know, I know what I know, but as a parent, like when you're worried about your child, or you're like stressed out about like, why is he not doing, turning in his homework, or, why is she talking to me that way? I mean, it elicits a strong emotion within us
Yeah.
that if we can teach our children and model for ourselves the power of the pause, that will help us at least get out of that really strong emotional dysregulated state to then be able to be like, okay, hold up. What is happening here? And to reassess the situation more rationally. But that's really hard when we're both like parent and child are sort of escalating each other and, not on purpose. Again,
Yeah,
nobody
right.
wants to be that way.
No.
It just, it happens. It happens.
So that makes me think of two things. One, I want to ask you a little bit about if you could talk a little bit more about that pause and how people can work on that. I've talked about that a little bit before on the podcast with a couple other guests, but it's always good to hear it again from different voices and different ideas. Then it also calls back a little bit to the first conversation we had about self-advocacy and learning those emotional words so that you can figure out what you are feeling. So then you can communicate whether you are the adult who is feeling something because of your child's behavior, or you're the child who is doesn't yet know how to explain it. Oh.
Yes. Well, I mean, I think the power of the pause sounds so simple. I mean, you kind of know what I'm saying when I
Yeah.
say that. But in the moment, it can be really hard. And it's harder, that much harder for people with ADHD.
Yeah.
Right. So part of this is twofold. One is that whoever is feeling dysregulated, they need to first recognize that they're feeling that way. Right, to be able to put a pause or a break on that emotion. And not everybody's good at that, I will sometimes ask families when we're talking about this and emotions and behavior issues, I will ask the parent, I'm like, well, what is this situation calling up for you? What are those thoughts and feelings that are happening each and every time that this happens? Because again, thoughts and feelings really drive behavior. And you can be feeling a whole host of emotions in the moment. Like if it's because, let's say randomly, that your child is, has gotten a detention again. And first of all, you're frustrated because you're thinking, why is this happening over and over again? But you're also feeling really sad or upset, disappointed in your child, and also sort of like, well, how can I help him? You're feeling helpless. So like there are so many emotions that rise up within us. And I like to help parents first get in touch with that emotion, themselves, because that really helps us kind of understand why we're reacting that
Yeah.
way when we are faced with having to talk with our child. And it's really hard to do that, especially when your child's self-esteem or something, I mean, when our child's are not doing well, like
Yeah.
so hard for parents. But I think it's first getting in touch with the fact that, okay, something doesn't feel right. There is an emotion there that's making me start having these bodily reactions and sensations where my heart's starting to beat faster. I'm breathing faster. I'm getting kind of hot under the collar, right now, starting to recognize those things. But if we can't pause long enough to discern that that is what this situation is evoking in us, we won't rationally know that we need to put the brake on it.
Yeah,
It's our body's internal system, alarm system, to tell us something is amiss here. And if we can learn to tune into our own bodily reactions and figure out that that reaction, that physiologic reaction, is there for a reason, and it's really trying to tell us something, that pause is really meant to help us stop and be like, okay, something is amiss in my environment
Yeah.
inside here that I need to figure out. But
Yeah.
when it's a safety concern, or it's like high, emotions, it can be really hard to recognize those signals. It just kind of propels us forward to, kind of get upset and,
Yeah.
say things we might regret later. And so that pause is really intended to help us be able to get to a space where we can start thinking rationally about what's going on.
Oh, and that reminds me of that book, Dr. Dan Siegel, The Whole Brain Child. He talks about
Yes.
how that's why it's so important to learn those language, the words, because then it gets you out of the emotion and into the language part of your brain,
Yes.
which calms you down.
Yes. So you flip your top, right? I
Yeah,
mean, we
yeah.
talk about the brain stem, the limbic system, and then the rational brain. And when you're feeling, it's all those signals that are running through your limbic system and it's revving you up, but you're just feeling like it's trying. I tell kids and parents all the time that amygdala is kind of like a smoke detector. And just like a smoke detector tries to keep us safe, it does so by beeping really loudly. So we are aware of it and then leave the house because it's, we don't want to get caught in a fire. But unlike a smoke detector, we don't emit a loud beep. Or instead, our bodies are sending us signals. And yet sometimes those signals make us feel uncomfortable even more, and then that also further dysregulates us. So part of this is, learning to be mindful of what's happening in our own bodies first, and recognizing that this system is a fail-safe system to help us stay safe, or when there's discomfort, to cue in to, okay, what's going on here, so that we can start to pay attention to that.
Yeah, and then when you there's so much to learn about yourself, and then you can then do that, and then I mean we talk about this all the time, but model that for our kids so they
Yes.
can So you guess you have to really have to start with yourself, which
Yes.
is so opposite of everything that you want to do as a parent.
It is. It is. But like we said, like that brain is still maturing. And so sometimes, because if we recognize that a behavior issue is a flag for lagging skills, right? Our kids don't have the skill yet to be able to adequately handle it. We need to recognize this and lend them our executive functioning that we have, right? To be able to be like, okay, hold on, what's going on here, right? Because we have to be that pause for them, but we have to first pause ourselves. And this is like, this is where sometimes it's really hard to do that.
And also, I imagine it's even harder, or I know it's even harder if you are struggling in some other way. So, like we said, a diagnosis, but maybe you're just really tired, or maybe your boss was awful to you that day, or you got lost and were late to something. That
Yes.
can make it so much harder.
It can be. I mean, life, right? I mean, just the competing demands of our time and attention, and just feeling like you're kind of already at the end of your rope. Again, I think most parents would do good if they can too, right? I mean, it's just the same, right? I mean, we love our children unconditionally. We want the best for them. And sometimes those emotions get the best of us as well.
All right, so now that we have covered, trying to regulate our emotions, and it's maybe easier for us as adults, but what are specific things we can either teach our kids or do with our kids to, to work on that?
In my class, actually, we have a whole session called Emotion Without Commotion. And it sort of builds on this idea that emotions do play a big part of what it means to have ADHD. And it's not to say that it's exclusive to us, but I think that people with ADHD, we tend to feel things so much stronger, so much with more intensity and quicker, that it kind of catches us off guard and we don't know what to do with it. So I think it's really important that, again, kids start to learn these skills early. And one or actually a couple of those is, first of all, helping them, like we talked about before, helping them first name the emotion so they understand, and also talking to them about it. But in the moment, I think it's really important to help kids, first of all, recognize, why is this happening? Like when we get really emotional and upset, I try to help kids understand that it's part of your brain and the amygdala sending these signals like, oh my gosh, danger, danger, danger. And I help them understand that amygdala. I think we've talked about it before with as a smoke detector. Sometimes kids really like the analogy of Harry Potter and his scar, right? Or Spider-Man and the Spidey sense. It's like that jolt of like, oh my gosh, something is wrong. It's like that awareness that something is amiss and that emotion is jolting us up and to be ready. And once we help them first understand that, okay, first of all, our body's trying to tell us something, we have to help reset that so that because otherwise we don't like that feeling inside that it generates, right? So one is what happens when we get that jolt? Well, we're starting to breathe faster, right? We're getting upset, we're getting emotionally revved up. And so our brain is sensing that something is wrong. We are in danger. I mean, obviously you've heard, this is not going to count as one of my two, but the deep breathing, right?
Yes.
Because we want to take that breath, but we want to be intentional where our in-breath is like at least 4 seconds, but then our out-breath is longer. Because we want to help reset that brain and send signals that, okay, it's okay. We're not in panic mode, but it does take a lot of work with our kids. How many of you parents listening to this are like laughing and like, I've tried breath and it does not work? No, but there is a true biologic reason why we do this. It's because when we're breathing fast, that's what happens when we get excitable, but also upset and frustrated. And that signal is very powerful for our brain. And then we think that we need to be, kind of revved up to go. It's that our fight, flight, or freeze response. And so we need to kind of send a signal back to our brain to reset that parasympathetic nervous system and start taking control of that. So that's not one, but that is a tip.
That's the first the zero, tip zero.
But another one that I really love is helping kids learn how to do like a body scan. Because again, when our body is all like inside, we need to sort of be like tune in to that. And again, paired with the breath, that's why I talked about it, but really helping them teach them to kind of scan from head to toe, where are we feeling that? Where are we feeling that? Our fists clenching up, or are we starting to feel like we can't, like our throat is constricting, or our stomach hurts, or our heart's beating so fast, or whatever. And helping them like close their eyes. And I like to teach it so that way they think of that red laser pointer, and it's like going back and forth and scanning them from
Scanning them.
head to toe,
Love
right?
it.
Parents can do this by like when you're getting ready for bed at night, you're snuggling in there. One of the things after you read a book is like, okay, I want you to close your eyes now, and I want you to just listen to my words, and we're going to take our deep breath in and out, and we're going to imagine that red pointer light going back and forth, and it's at the top of our head, and you notice that I'm talking more quiet, right? And then I just sort of imagine what it would be like. And I'm describing as it goes down, it's going across your eyelids, and now it's going across your cheeks and seeing if it's tense or if it's relaxed. And then your jawline and your neck and your shoulders. So you just kind of narrate that using a very quiet, soft voice while they're closing their eyes. You can even do it with them. And having them notice what's happening in our body. Is our body feeling like jello or like stiff, like robots? And if there's any spot in that body that's feeling really tight and all that, breathe into it. Let's take our deep breath, and so you're sort of helping them begin to notice those body sensations. And that's really important. One, you're doing it when you're calm, right? And two, it's a way for them to learn that skill so that way in the moment when they're feeling like that, they can eventually fall back on that skill to do it very quickly, because that's what we want our kids to get a sense of. This is how it feels when we are calm, we are safe. And when you narrate it to them that way, it helps them visualize, yeah, this feels nice, But when it doesn't feel nice, what's happening? And this is what we can do, right? We have to first tune in, and then with our conversations with them about like, this is the emotion, this is we need to ask for help, It sort of is a pathway to helping our kids understand what to do for themselves. And it's a big, like, initial step, not just labeling the emotion, but then themselves being able to recognize what is their body trying to tell them, you know? Because, like I said, the alarm, the smoke detector beeps really loudly. We do not emit those loud noises. Body sends us signals. And so if we can teach them what to do when calm and to recognize that, that is a next step towards helping them take that pause themselves, right? And then, you know, kids with ADHD, we have to see things that are visual, but we also, much more than that, we have to help our kids visualize the end in mind. You know, so like, let's say a kiddo has a hard time transitioning, right? And which is, I know, very common because with ADHD, our attention when we're into something or really that's our preferred activity, and then having to immediately or abruptly stop, we don't want to because we're getting all those dopamine hits and we're like, yeah, that's great. And then all of a sudden we have to do something that we don't want to, we have to stop. That's really hard for kids. And again, not an excuse, but an explanation. But sometimes when there's a recurring problem that's happening, you know, put your detective hats on. Well, I've noticed whenever I ask you to turn the video game off or whatever it is, it always leads to these big emotions. And then I start yelling, which I don't like to do. And I know you don't like how that feels. So I wonder if we could kind of figure out like what it would look like for you to successfully do that. But let's imagine, how would you feel if you're able to actually transition? And what I mean by that is to stop that and do something else. Like, first have them envision what it would be like for them. Like, yeah, it would feel kind of like when we're doing the deep breathing, like the body scan, right? And I would feel proud that I did it or whatever. And then how can we get there? Let's walk backwards. You know, what would you need? Because, you know, from me to help you know. Like, how many more minutes is left, or, you know, how, or, you know, that this is going to happen next. Do you want to know what's happening next versus like end the stop? So again, it's kind of like helping them envision what it would look like if they are able to do it and recognize that feeling. And then also asking them, like, do you remember the other time that you were able to do this well? Like, what helped you do it that time? You know, and then what else can we do? Do you think that's going to help this time, or do I have to, we have to do something else in addition to that? You know, because again, I think if we can help our kids recognize they can do it, they've done it before, start from that strength, you know, like that time when they were able to do it, but then be like, how come you're able to do it here but not here? And I'm wondering, like, what worked there that maybe we didn't do, or maybe we need to do something else too, right? But helping them be part of the discussion is will always go much better. But sometimes they may be like, no, I like the video game. Sorry, you know, right?
Too bad.
Or whatever it is. And that's where, you know, I mean, obviously, as parents, then we have to put in that consequence. Like, I know, I get it. You don't want to stop doing that, but there's other things that we need to do. So how are we going to get through this?
So one thing that you mentioned a little bit, and I wanted to go back to that, was the dynamics at home and how, it's not just one parent and one child. There are often, maybe you're co-parenting, or maybe you have parents in two different homes, or you have multiple siblings. Some may or may not have a diagnosis of something that causes executive dysfunction. So how do you manage all that? Solve our problems.
Do you have a couple out? I don't
Yeah,
know.
right?
I
We don't have
mean,
enough time.
So, you know, first of all, I think the biggest thing to understand is you can only control your own emotions, nobody else's. You can only control your own emotions and no one else's, right? And so when you have multiple kids in the household or another partner who, you know, again, maybe neurotypical, maybe not, right? But it gets harder the more people are in that room when emotions are boiling over. It may be such that parents, first of all, need to put their detective hat on and be like, okay, how often is this happening? What can we do to prevent it? What can we do in the moment to sort of get everybody out of crisis mode? Because that's really the two things that, if we have to simplify it, that's kind of the approach we need to take is okay, when a behavior issue happens, is it happening often enough where we need to go ahead and kind of put our heads together, maybe even involve the pediatrician or, a therapist about this? And then secondly, if it keeps happening, knowing that, okay, what can we do? Like, what's leading up to this that we can kind of identify if there's predisposing factors or things that happen, like if the kiddo's not sleeping well or not eating well or they're just hangry, like all those things, right? Not that can contribute to it, or a sibling just keeps like pushing buttons. But also then what can we do in the moment? Because nobody likes that feeling. We just want to avoid that as much as possible, but I also think we need to make sure that we're not avoiding it without it addressing it too, right? But we and in the moment, we just need to make sure everybody is de-escalating and not making it worse for the child.
And then what about maybe being really intentional about so maybe there is a child who just by default ends up getting more attention because of whatever diagnosis they have or whatever their experience is. And then there's another child, maybe there's a neurotypical child that is just kind of like, not making it difficult for anybody and is just doing their thing. How do you balance that so everybody feels loved and supported?
Yeah, I mean, this is where sort of intentionality with the family rhythm is important, and recognizing that there are going to be times that one child may require more attention than others from the others. And really having a conversation with first your partner about this, is there a way that we could sort of split up duties so that way neither child is, unattended, or is there a way for me to, acknowledge this with the other child and validate those emotions that that child may be experiencing, even though they're go with the flow? I mean, all children will want to have your time. And so talking to them about, I know that it's been really tough lately and we've had to, kind of give all our energy to, your brother. However, I want you to know how loved you are, and I'm going to make every intention to carve out special time for us just to kind of have quiet time. Whether that be like 10 minutes every night before you go to bed, we're just going to snuggle, or we're going to make a date and we're going to go do something fun, just the two of us, while I arrange for childcare. I think everybody feels appreciated when we are talking out loud and sharing those thoughts with our children. And showing them that, yes, we recognize this may feel unfair at times, but it doesn't mean I love you any less, And then giving your child the space to say, ask for what they need, right? It's okay. Like, just because I'm busy with your brother doesn't mean you cannot approach me if you need something, because I'm here to help you.
That was really beautifully explained. Thank you. What about when these kids go out in the world and they're spending time with people that don't live with them in their house? How can we make sure that, that they're being supported in those environments? And also or what advice do you have for the people who do spend time with them outside of the house?
Okay, that's a great question. First of all, if a parent is concerned about a behavior that's happening at home, you'll want to do some, kind of checking in with how they're doing in the other environments or with other people, right? Because I think just because it happens in home doesn't necessarily mean it's happening outside of the home. Sometimes, especially with kids, they can mask things, right? And so, especially females. So, it may not be happening to the degree that it is happening at home, which is oftentimes the case. But obviously, parents need to be inquiring about that. If they find that a child's behavior challenges are, kind of showing themselves at school or with the babysitter or whatnot. I think it's going to be important, first of all, to help educate those people involved to know what's happening with your child and to really come at it from the standpoint of, helping the other person understand what's about your child, not just the challenges, but what their strengths are. And just to give them a heads up, like, we've been noticing, over the past several weeks, Johnny has had a hard time at home doing this. I wonder if that's been something that you've seen when you're with him. And if not, that's wonderful. But if you start seeing anything like that, I would really appreciate you giving me a heads up because that way we're aware of what's happening. And then that way I can tell you like what's working at our house versus not, because then that way we can also reach out to other people on the team if needed. And I would start it with just kind of that casual discussion. I always try to help parents if they find that the behaviors or challenges are happening outside of the home. Most non-parental figures want to know how to handle it, right? And so you could always offer like, what if this were to happen, this is what I find helps best at in our home. And it may not necessarily work all the time, but it's worth a shot because we found some success with it. Some parents may feel strongly about, who is able to discipline their child or not, right? And so I think having that discussion with your other partner, kind of thinking about that, like what would be feasible, what would be okay, how would you want to be alerted to things that are happening? And sometimes schools have, talking about schools, sometimes they have to do certain things according to protocol too. They would try to take into account what the family wishes, but if there's a child who's self-harming or making threats, I mean, obviously they have to respond in a certain way. But I think it all comes down to making sure that we communicate with like I've noticed, using the language of I've noticed, not you said kind of thing. But then also reaching out, finding out how pervasive it is, if it's happening, and what strategies they've tried. And then you can also share what you've tried, and it becomes more of a collaborative brainstorming. Because I think in the end, all of us want to support the children. It's just it depends on the environment. And again, it goes back to in the moment, thinking about that emotion, what are those thoughts that you're having? And our thoughts and feelings, they can either spur us to take action or not take action, right? And so this is, I mean, at the simplest, that's what we've been talking about this whole podcast, right?
It's true.
And whether it's like dealing with behavior challenges or like, talking to your, taking the next step of like, should we talk to the school about this? Should we, but yeah, that's why it's really important to get in touch with how we're f really thinking and feeling and talk about it. That's why I'm so glad that we're having this discussion on the podcast because it's so applicable to so many different things around parenting. And we, unfortunately, I mean, society does ha paint this picture that to be a good parent, you will be balancing all this and doing all these things. And yet, there is not this perfect parent ever. We're all just trying to do the best that we can. And so there's no fault in sort of going back and forth, like, should I do this? Should I do that? But having someone to talk through that with you so that way you can make a decision, it may end up being one of the best decisions you've made. Not keeping it inside. Because again, that I think that's the we need to just be able to reach out to somebody, whether we're a parent or a child. We want someone to understand and be our thinking partner with us. So.
And if you don't have, like, say you don't have a partner to talk about it, or you talk about it with your partner and you both are still feeling a little unsettled, it makes sense to reach out to a professional because they are going to have that experience and also just the different perspective that's outside of the intensity of your of the reality of your own life as that
Yes.
child's parent.
Yes. Yeah. So again, like we said, there's no question big or small. Just ask the question.
I feel like that's the theme of everything that I've talked about on in every single episode. It's like, just ask the question. And
Yeah.
but it's scary because that's a vulnerable thing. To ask the
Yeah.
question admits that you don't know.
Yes. And nobody likes to feel that way, right? Want to have some control over the outcome if we can. But there's no way anybody can know really what the, was going to happen. Sometimes you have to just sort of act the way that's aligned with your values, or act in, like you're doing this because you really want X for your child, or whatever. But if you're guided by something and you feel strongly about it, I think there are ways to do it in which to promote connection and collaboration with the other person.
So this is making me think, like, say fear of the unknown or if whatever has been holding you back from asking the question and asking for help, and now you have a teenager who is really struggling. How can, like, I know we decided earlier it's not too late, but it may feel too late. How, like, what do you have to say to the parents who are listening who are like, all right, you might be talking about a 4-year-old here, but what about my 14-year-old or my 17-year-old?
I mean, I will say it's never too late. And regardless of the age of our child, as they mature and grow and leave the house, even, I mean, you will always be their parent, and so it is your job to worry about them and to think about them and to want the best for them. I mean, that just comes with the territory. But I think the biggest thing is that, again, I mean, it's going back to what I said before. You know your child the best. In the moment, it's hard to see our child struggling or, withdrawing from activities or, going through something and we're not sure how to help them. It can be really scary, especially, with suicide rates and drugs and alcohol, those kinds of different influences that are more and more available as our children grow up and go out of the house, right? It is a true fear. But I think, again, that's why connection is going to be important. Finding the space and the time to be able to check in with your child, no matter what age, to show them that you care, to show them that you are there, is probably the first thing to prevent it from feeling like it's too late. And then always knowing that, again, connection before compliance is like that is something that I think I've said to you before for the younger kids, but connection is always going to win all the time, right? Because when our child is struggling, if let's say they're depressed or they're feeling suicidal or they're, any of those things, it's really imperative that we try to show them that we see them, that we want to help them. And sometimes it's just even offering the fact that you are there and you they do not have to suffer alone. It's because sometimes our teens can feel that way, that we won't understand, like, why should I even try to tell you? It's too exhausting because I don't want to get a lecture or, right? But all that aside, if you can help your teen just be feel like they're seen, the other stuff will fall into place. I know that that's not a real answer, but like I feel like in the end, that's all we all want is
Yeah, it's true.
to be heard. And those behaviors or the things that our kids or teens can get into is because they don't have a way to adequately ask for help. And yes, some of these things can run in families too, which predisposes them. I mean, I don't want to downplay what anybody's feeling in that moment. Because when we, people with ADHD, people with depression and anxiety, we tend towards the negative. Like our brain just kind of goes there. It's a protective mechanism, actually. It's trying to keep us safe and trying to make us like not take action, because what if we do? And so it can be hard to break out of that negative cycle. But I think it takes, nobody likes to be in that cycle, but we don't know how to get out sometimes. Like whether it be something like depression, suicidality, just anything that's holding us back, we need someone to give us that hand, say we can get out of that, right? And we need to help shift our thoughts from like all the challenges and all the bad things to more like what's possible. Like, how can I shift from thinking about all the things that are negative and reminding myself of, well, my life, what is good about my life? What are the strengths that I have? And that's true for kids with ADHD. I mean, I think a lot of the especially if they're undiagnosed or the early in their journey, many of the behaviors or things that happen, impulsivity, not listening, not turning in homework, all late assignments, like they get a lot of negative feedback. Like, why can't you do this? Stop doing that. They get suspended. They get a bad grade on their test. Then it becomes this loud story in their head about who they are. And we, it can be hard to break free from. And that's where, working with a therapist or a coach, working with a physician for appropriate medication, can help. But it's a team effort. It's a team effort.
And it goes back to what we were saying before, like you really have to take care of yourself and so that you can take care of your children and learning to identify your emotions, regardless of your age.
And not to be afraid of it. One of the things that I tell kids is, because kids who are anxious, who are depressed, they may feel like, and with ADHD, like they may feel something is wrong with them. Every time they get brought into the doctor, why do I have to do this again? What's wrong with me? They get really upset or disappointed or angry that they have to be doing these things. I mean, I think part of our job is to help them understand that there's nothing wrong with them. It's just that their brain thinks and learns a little differently, and we have to kind of help that brain not be so good at keeping us like so like like I don't know. Lately, Inside Out 2 is a movie that I've been talking a lot with my families, and I'm like, did you see that movie? Anxiety is really crazy sometimes, and she's doing too good of a job sometimes. Gotta help tame her a little bit and be like, it's okay,
You
I
don't have
got
to be on all the time.
I mean, I just don't want our kids to be afraid of that. I mean, it is a biological reason that that's there, but again, it's our compass in life. It's sort of helping us navigate, everything that's coming our way. So it can be a normal reaction, but like we can't let it hold us back. And if we are stuck, if we are not feeling good and we don't know how else to respond, we need to at least allow our kids the knowledge that we are here for them, and then also teach them adequate coping strategies so that we can know that they need help too.
So in case anybody didn't listen to the first episode with you, will you share with everyone where they can find you and the special thing that you get to do outside of your job?
Yes, so my website is letstalkkidshealth.org. You can find out more about all the different things that I'm involved in. If you're local in Indiana, I do have a part-time private practice. I also have a course called Teach Me ADHD. It's for kids and parents to take together. And that's for kids 8 to 12 with a diagnosis of ADHD, where you guys become detectives and learn everything there is to know about ADHD to help build that strong foundation so that you can connect, communicate, and collaborate together and set up your systems for success. We also now have a Teach Me ADHD Director's Cut, which is for teens 13 to 18. Unlike becoming detectives, your teen will become the director of their lives And parents are still involved. They're stage managers, so they're kind of waiting in the wings to kind of help if they need. But they're given all the information of what we cover in those 90-minute workshops, so that they can help their budding director keep rehearsing and practicing those life skills. And I also have a YouTube channel as well, so and a membership community called ADHD Sleuths for parents. I'm also doing so many other things with my own family, and I really enjoy thinking. I have ADHD myself, and so I'm always dreaming and thinking of new and different ways to help support families. But I think one of the things that, if I can just say, is like it's really important to be able to develop that power of the pause, or at least building that muscle of taking a step back and being mindful and taking that deep breath in and out every day, to pause and to think about what's the one thing that I'm grateful for at this moment. How do I, how do I feel in this moment, and tune into that, your body and your thoughts and feelings. It's one way to practice self-regulation every day. And if you can model that for your kids, because all of a sudden, if you like stop and you're like, they're like, what are you doing? I mean, use that as a teachable moment. Like, oh, I can't wait. Like, can you, like, oh my gosh, it's fall. I can smell all the smells and look at all the leaves. Like, it's just such a great skill to do. So, I want to just remind parents that in the moments when it can get tough and challenging, and you're not sure what to do, take a step back, pause, and go back to the basics. Go back to the basics and connect.
Making my eyes all teary. Oh,
Oh.
well, thank you so much, Narissa.
It's always a pleasure. Thanks for thinking of me and inviting me back.
And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen. I know I felt so much better about being a parent after talking with Narissa, and I hope you do too after listening today. Be sure to check out the show notes for more helpful information about today's topic. As always, if you have questions or topic suggestions, you can reach out to me at podcast@beyondbooksmart.com. And as I said in the beginning, if you've got a story about tackling your executive function skills, please let me know. I'd love to have you on the show. It helps us out a ton if you can rate us on Apple or Spotify, and even better, leave a written review on Apple so more people can find us. You can follow and even set up auto downloads of Focus Forward on any podcast app you listen to, and sign up for our subscriber email at beyondbooksmart.com/podcast. Our producer and editor is Sean Potts. Our content marketer is Justice Abbott. And a billion million thanks to Dr. Narissa Bauer for coming back on the show to share her knowledge with you, our Focus Forward listeners. Thanks for listening.